Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching. This episode may be difficult for some. We're going to be talking about grief because I recently lost a friend. He was a friend that I met in Japan. I spent almost 20 years in Japan, and I met him at work, and he's a mutual friend. My husband and I became friends with him, and we received word that he died in his sleep. He was visiting friends in Italy, and they had a nice dinner, and he went to sleep, and he didn't wake up. So that was news that we received quite recently, and it's still very shocking because I know intellectually that he's gone, but I am removed from the emotional reaction to or response to a loss of a really good friend. His name was Angus, and I miss him, and I really do know intellectually, you know, he's gone, but I can't seem to wrap my head around it. And it's also really difficult because he is in Japan, and he will most likely be buried in Japan. He has friends, and his life is in Japan. He, you know, worked in university, and I mean, he's lived in Japan for as long as I've known him, and I've known him for about 10 years. So yeah, it's really difficult because we don't have the means to go to a funeral, and we will have to, my husband and I will just have to grieve his loss, mourn his loss together. And that's difficult. And I wonder if it has something to do with ambiguous loss. Erin, you can always speak to that. But I heard the term, and it was in relation to a body not being able to recover a body. So it was described as ambiguous loss. So I wonder if that has something to do with why I'm having such a difficult time with the emotional processing, with just feeling disconnected from the feeling experience of grief. And I don't think that's normal for me. I don't think that I normally wouldn't have an emotional reaction. And I compare this to when I was 16, a dear friend of mine died in a car accident. And when I was at my friend's house, my other friend's house, and we were planning prom, my friend's mother came into the room, and there was a group of us, and we went into the other room, and she told us that my friend Gillen had passed away. I immediately felt the loss. I screamed. I cried. I immediately felt that loss. I knew in my body that he was gone, and I felt that. I lost people when I was in Japan, and I lost my aunt. I lost my grandmother. I lost my brother, I lost my father, and now I've lost my friend Angus, and I still have this disconnect with the physical feeling of the loss. And I wonder, Erin, is that something that you've seen in the literature? Does that have something to do with what we go through with loss? I'm just really curious to know.
Yeah, well, first of all, I know you're holding a lot right now, and that has to be incredibly hard to get this news about Angus's unexpected death. I want to say I'm sorry. You know, we've been told, say my condolences, but just know that, you know, you have people beside you, and you can grieve however you need to grieve. And I'm so sorry this is happening right now amidst, the busyness of fall and your work too. So to answer your question, I think that so sometimes when you're a teenager, you may have more open emotional pathways. That is why you're responding a little bit more actively and openly at the onset of a big grief and loss experience. And that's not always the case. Sometimes, you might have that opened up a little bit more in adulthood or vice versa, keeping in mind that everybody grieves every different loss differently. So someone may have not been as open at that point and now have that type of response later on in their life. We're constantly shifting and changing how we relate to loss. For you right now, it sounds like there's a lot of shock going on with this news, and that type of shock protects us and also makes it really challenging for us to access emotional pathways for processing right at the beginning. And that can be a really common experience in grief and loss, especially for adults when there are other things that we have to get done in the day related to maybe work, childcare, other responsibilities, community service, that type of thing. So it makes that some us kind of go into without even having really the option in some ways, that kind of shock state and not able to access those emotional pathways at that moment. And I think that, like I said, can be protective and can also be difficult when we're wanting to feel more. I like to think about it as being okay with wherever you're at with your feelings and being self-reflective about it, which you are. So, why am I not feeling so much right now when this loss really has devastated me or really has had such an impact on me? And continue to stay curious. And maybe later on, you will need to cry a lot or process in a different way with creativity. So that's always a shifting response as you continue to grieve this loss. And then you mentioned so many different losses that you've had, that you've experienced since COVID, during COVID, up until now. And that's called compounded loss or compounded grief. I like to say grief or loss in these situations sometimes because you will have compounded grief and compounded loss in those experiences because you're going back and revisiting other losses, right? Like this brings up some of the other losses you've had more recently. And in my book, I actually include an activity for the reader to uncouple a bunch of different losses and kind of look at kind of the strengths and challenges of where they're at with those. And so that is just one strategy to deal with these compounded grief experiences so that you can open yourself up to what you need to do, need to feel as you grieve, Angus, and also grieve not being able to have closure at a funeral in Japan because of the circumstances that exist right now. And then to answer that other question on the ambiguous loss space, ambiguous loss typically is one of two things where there's a physical absence with a psychological presence. So thinking about missing people, soldiers who might be prisoners of war, and family members who are estranged. Right. So we don't know for sure if they died, but we're missing their physical presence. The other type of ambiguous loss is the psychological absence with the physical presence. We've had people on our podcast talk about this. Sharon's son, George, with his work in the Parkinson's disease community. That's one example of this. Traumatic brain injuries and, severe addictions, those sorts of things. And these things, can often go unnoticed by other people outside of the griever's sphere, the griever's space, which makes it really challenging because it's ongoing. It feels like there isn't an ability to find closure because that shouldn't be the goal anymore. The goal goes back to what we talked about in a prior podcast of looking at receptivity rather than acceptance or closure. So this is going to be a part of me and maybe I will find that person again, or maybe that person will come back from an addiction or whatever it may be. I'm going to hold space for that, and I'm going to hold space for the grief that I need to experience as a part of that and be buoyant and resilient as I move with that. And trying to reduce judgment here is incredibly important too. So we want to judge things like, oh, I'm feeling too much, or I'm not feeling enough. I don't know if I'm responding right. And there is no judgment in grief and loss. I think it's just about opening oneself up to understanding and being okay if need more time and space and maybe need to shift some things in one's schedule. So LaShawn, going back to your experience, maybe over the coming days, you may need more rest. You may need more reflection time, or you may decide to be more active. Or your activity might stay the same, right? Like that's the mystery of this whole process. So I will kind of send it back to you with a question after kind of I framed ambiguous loss and a little bit about grief and loss concepts and compounded loss, and just curious, what do you think your needs are right now?
That's a good point. When you were talking about compounded loss, that really piqued my interest because hearing about Angus's passing and it was so shocking, it immediately slingshot me back to my brother. And I could feel how it was being on the train, getting that phone call from my mom, and expecting that it would be about my dad because I was planning to go back to Colorado one last visit with my dad because he had late stage cancer and his prognosis was pretty grim. And I knew that it would be the last visit and I was psychologically preparing myself for that. On top of that, I had just finished a round of emails with my brother, planning for him to come pick me up at the airport. That was so far from my mind that it would be about my brother, that it was such a shock. And it was the same thing. I got the phone call. My mother told me that my brother had passed away. She was very upset. She was crying. I was telling myself I need to be strong for my mother and not lose it for her. And then when I got off the phone with her, I had to tell my husband, who was very, very close to my brother, and he immediately broke down. And again, I felt like I needed to be strong for him. I was only worried about how this was tearing him apart. And at the same time, I was desperately trying to find some kind of connection. And what you said about no judgment, that kind of helped me feel a little bit of relief because I'm full of judgment. I just realized that today. My judge is so active. My inner critic is just so brutally relentless with me today. And I'm like, what is that? Because normally I can manage my judge, but it's like turbocharged right now. And it's not just my non-reaction to this person who, and I'm going through all of the things, you know, what I've done with Angus. And I keep telling myself, I do care. And just like you said, Erin, it is devastating. This is someone who's been in my life, been in the tapestry of my life for more than 10 years and such an important part of my life. You know, people, when you are living abroad, and you're in a host country, you forge these really, really deep bonds with people, but it's not unusual for those bonds to fade away, especially if you leave the country and you go back to your home country or you go to another host country. It's not unusual. So it really stands out to me that Angus took the time to reach out. Whether it was sending a picture or, you know, just he, and the interesting thing with Angus is that he'd always send me a text or something when I was thinking about him. It's like we were on the same wavelength. So, yeah. So I would say just by my long-winded answers, Erin, I think I need to tell them a story. I have this compulsion to hold on to all of those memories. I remember when I was talking to my husband, I was like, when did we meet him? And how long did we know him? And I was just trying to hold on to all these memories. And one thing that I notice about myself is that I, you know, go back into the annals of memory and I try to hold on to their voice. I did that with my brother, and now I'm doing that with Angus. So I think voice is really important to me. I think mostly, Erin, I think my needs are just to tell this story. the story of Angus, the story of Cameron, because I'm a private griever. I do not like to grieve with other people. I don't know. There's something ostentatious about it. Like, I respect and I appreciate when people put out on Facebook the loss of people. I remember doing a Facebook post when I lost my brother. One, because I knew that there were some people who knew him, and I just wanted to put it out there on Facebook so people knew that he had passed. But it wasn't so much for me to be public about my grief. I've never been comfortable being public about my grief. But yeah, I would say like that compounded grief and that compounded loss is definitely something I'm experiencing, because I'm going through all the different losses that I experienced, and you know, the grief experiences, and kind of comparing them. So that's my inner critic going, do you remember when you did this? And you were just so these are the things that are going through my mind: cold, detached, not human, wrong. Those are things that are going through my mind, because I was really nervous. I did not want to tell my husband about Angus, and I was smiling. I just remember my inner critic saying, this is not a reason to smile. This is, why are you smiling? And it was very condemning of me for even considering smiling. But then I, you know, I expressed it, that, you know, I am not smiling because I'm taking pleasure. I'm nervous. And that's just what happens to me, is when I'm nervous, I smile. And that's something that I've always been very judgmental towards myself about. So those are things that I think I need, is just to be able to tell the story of a man who was just so impactful to my life, and lots of memories, fun memories with Angus. He was a fun guy. He had such an open heart, and he embodies curiosity, Erin. I think you would have loved to have met him. He really embodies curiosity. He's almost like childlike in his approach to things. That's something I learned from him, is that non-judgmental willingness to learn, and not, he was never a type of person who would be like, oh, I know that. He was just always like, oh, wow. You know, like, really? That's, and he'd like learn more things, and then he'd get really excited. While he told Doug, mostly Doug, they would have political conversations about the state of the world. It was just, they would stay up, you know, late. He'd come over. Sometimes he would stay over. He was definitely such a huge part of our lives in Japan for a very long time. And it was because of his fierce loyalty. He was very, very loyal to us and our friendship, more so than I was. He always poked me. Oh, there he is. let me get back in touch with Angus. So, yeah.
He sounds like a very kind friend.
Yeah, he was.
I love having the privilege to share the space with you as you tell the story of Angus and a little bit more into your compounded losses throughout COVID. And one of those things that can be a tool is, like you said, storytelling. And sometimes you might need to tell that story 1,000 times, right? Or maybe you just want to say it once. So that's something else, because that adds another layer of kind of energy consumption in ourselves and our days. So it's being kind and holding that gentleness, like, you know, we talked about earlier. And then you mentioned like having the voice sounds of your brother and Angus, and maybe down the road, or maybe that's this week, maybe there is an opportunity to get some recordings of that to hang on to and, you know, revisit every year or whenever it makes sense to you, or never revisit, but just know they're there. That's just something that people, I think, in the shock phase, a lot of those things kind of go by the side, and then they come and tell me, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have had this. But when you're in shock and in those early days, it's really hard to do any of that. So if anybody in your life is supporting you with your grief, or, you know, this is to our listeners too, for friends of grievers, and be sure you're helping them with that early on in their grief and seeing if there's something you can do to support them with those tasks. And then the judgment. I feel like grief holds this mirror up to ourselves where the judge just gets really big. And I don't know if it's something with like our bodily systems and the way that they're processing everything. I don't know, but I do know one thing that might relate to that. And that is in Mary Frances O'Connor's The Grieving Brain, her book on neuroscience and the grief and the brain. And she talks about when these instances happen, you know, our brain's creating a new map, but that person's no longer there. So it's trying to kind of grasp at things to recreate this map. And so rest and having experiences day after day are two ways to reorient your brain to this new world you are now living in without Angus. So that's something else to think about. But I think the brain, as it's creating that map, might also be bringing these judgments forward a lot as well. And it's like, no, wait a second, having that reassurance that as big as these judgments might be, that means you are a container of even bigger things that bring you light and bring you life in terms of who you are. So maybe holding that additional space for revisiting your strengths and revisiting, you know, who you are as, you know, a good person, because we all know that to be true. And we have many examples of that specifically for you, LaShawn. So that's something else maybe to consider as well. And then I know the other piece of this that you mentioned is you are grieving this loss alongside your husband, who's grieving the same loss, similar relationship, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How is that going?
Well, it's okay. So one of the things that was really difficult, this timing of everything, my husband is struggling with severe, severe depression. And it manifests as rage, and it also manifests as just uncontrollable sobbing, which he does in private. I only saw that when he got the news about Angus. So having to be the one to give him the news was hard enough. Being disconnected from my own visceral reaction to Angus's passing. And witnessing how much it devastated my husband, and how he was really, really concerned about the fact that he did not see Angus would always contact me, because I'm the one who I am really good at getting back to people. And this is something that, you know, my husband beats himself up about, not staying in touch with his friends. And so this was something he used to bludgeon himself with. And that was another thing. And so I was, one, at a loss for words, because I didn't want to compound his pain. I didn't want to add to his misery. So when he was like beating himself up about, he said, I had written him an email in my mind. I was going to send him the email, and I will never be able to do that. That was heartbreaking. And he said, he'll never know how much I loved him. And I said, Angus knew how much you loved him, and he loved you. And it was really heartbreaking to see. So I think how that manifests with me when I'm around people who are openly suffering and openly broken down by the grief, my reaction is to shut off that part of the grief that I can feel is coming, like that wave of tears or that need to just curl up into a ball, because the other person I feel like the other person needs my presence and needs that stability. As I am witnessing him fall apart, I feel like I need to be put together more. And then I, you know, of course, my judge is very active and, oh, you should be more open, or, you know, whatever. That is, I think, my biggest self-criticism is not doing it right. You know, not being able to show up like a human being. Like, I often think there's something wrong with me, or I'm somehow like maybe disconnected, or there's something wrong with me emotionally that I do not express grief in public with others in that way. And I don't judge others how they show up, but I do judge myself on how I show up. And so, yeah, I think that's what's affect that's how it is for me to grieve this loss with my husband. I do feel somewhat responsible. Oh, I should have given him the phone, or I should have initiated a interaction with him right away, so that he would have at least had that. But there's no way to know that someone's gonna die in their sleep, you know, especially someone as healthy as Angus. It's hard to wrap my brain around. I understand intellectually that it's not about healthy or you know, it's beyond comprehension. And I think I could probably drive myself crazy trying to figure out why a healthy young man like Angus, who exercised every day of his life and was hiking the day that he passed away. And I also have some anger as well, because I'm like, these are two men in my life that I've seen as my older brothers, right? I really did see a lot of my older brother in Angus, because Angus is protective. He's loving. In a lot of ways, he was kind of not like my brother, but his presence in my life was like, it was my surrogate older brother. And so to lose both of them, it's like, it's not fair. That's how I feel. I just feel really angry about it. It really is just not fair that I lost both my brothers. I was really hoping that I would, you know, have many, many, many years with them. But it's not the case. So I feel like I'm trailing away and babbling. So Erin, please take a moment.
Thank you for being so raw and real and vulnerable. That's such a hard thing to do in grief. And, you know, everything that you said can resonate, I'm sure, with so many of our listeners. And the complexity of the marital relationship, it seems like often there is the one partner who takes on a little bit more of the, for lack of a better word, like pragmatism, and then the other one takes on a little bit more of the feeling. And sometimes those roles can switch in grief and loss, but that's not always the case, right? But for the person who is taking on more of the kind of pragmatic piece, in a sense, like that could be you in your relationship, making sure there is that room for yourself too. And in the feelings piece, you know, you had mentioned like kind of cutting it off right as the tears started. You know, what would happen if you allowed the tears to flow? You know, would that be more helpful or less helpful? Just kind of considering that. And then you are so insightful about bringing up this feeling of anger. Anger is such a normal response in grief and loss. And I think for women, it's even that much more challenging to be able to express it in just by the way we've been, you know, socialized throughout our lives. So, you know, I think the way that you talked about your anger is so healthy, and one way to really kind of explore what's going on with your feelings of loss with Angus and how that relates to the loss of your brother. So continuing that opportunity for outlets for that anger, you know, whether that's, you know, music or gentle movement, or I know you're familiar, we talked about this in the past, the kind of smash rooms or whatever it may be, or you get smashed to play, those types of things. But I think this is where the healing happens, where when we can be gentle with ourselves, but also interrogate all of these things too, that lead us onto a pathway of kind of a broader understanding of ourselves, a broader generosity for ourselves, and, you know, a bigger container of love too. I think these are the moments where those kind of things start to manifest. And not saying that grief always has to be this big thing that you take on and do specific work within to always, you know, make these very step-by-step changes. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is it can be a good healer in itself to be an active griever, be present with the grief and try to understand what it's telling you. Somebody told me once that when it comes to big grief experiences, if you haven't changed through those, then something went wrong. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to keep that in the back of my head and just continue to play around with that idea and see. And you know, that change could even just be a broader love for ourselves. a more gentleness toward ourselves, those types of things as well. The other thing that I want to add here is people at various points on the timeline of their grief might be more active or might be more immersed in solitude or solace. There is actually terms for this, the types of grieving. There's instrumental grievers and there's intuitive grievers. Intuitive grievers tend to be a little bit more expressive, do art, write, that type of thing. Instrumental grievers tend to be more active, maybe trying to find a cure for something or, trying to set up a memory garden or things like that. So that people often fall within all of those, but that's just a term I'll throw out there for our listeners too, to help frame what some of these grieving types are and maybe give a little bit more language to how people can channel their feelings into how they actively grieve.
Erin, what you said about the healing and, instrumental grievers and intuitive grievers, because thank goodness I haven't had any really big losses recently, before Angus. So I really didn't know what that process looked like or how it felt. And what I have found in one, talking about this on this episode, and two, just, I guess, being aware of what I'm going through has really been very healing. And I find that two things that are very empowering about this conversation. One is releasing judgment. I realize that I am really critical of how I react to things or respond to things, especially if I feel like I should be doing it in a certain way. And it's empowering to know that one, everybody grieves differently, and that it appears in, it shows up in different ways. And it's comforting because it normalizes what I'm going through. I don't feel so weird or awkward, and I'm able to accept what I'm going through. And I hope that listeners who might be going through this themselves and are really critical about how they grieve, I hope that that will also help them accept where they are and what they're going through. And what I found is, in talking about it and looking at it and being curious about it, has really helped lighten the load for me and given me the space that I need to, feel the pain of the loss of my friend Angus. And it is really healing, I have found.
I'm glad to hear that. And as you know, there are moments, after this call and into the months and years where it may go backwards, right? And then we may go forward, and that's all part of the process, and that's all okay. And I like how you summarize that, because the words that you pointed out, that you so succinctly summarized, kind of really drew in the idea of awareness and understanding and normalization. And I think that is one of the keys of just the general public when they are supporting others. This isn't necessarily just for professionals in this space, but how do you help people sit with that understanding and awareness and then, take part in this movement of normalizing grief and even some of the big feelings and emotions that come up with that, and being okay with the individual to have those and express those. LaShawn, as you move into this upcoming week, is there an intention or is there something that you want to call in, that you want to really listen to regarding your grief experience?
My intention is to give myself grace. I am harder on myself than I need to be when it comes to how grief shows up for me. And I also really want to honor my friend Angus. The more I think about him and how he lived his life so fully. I mean, he was traveling. He was so good at celebrating, and he was so good at bringing people together. And my intention would be in part of the grieving process for me would be to honor him by appreciating my life and appreciating little things the way that Angus did and getting out in nature. He was always hiking. He knew all the best trails in every place he ever lived or went. He knew all the best trails in Italy. He knew all the best trails in Japan and all the places that he traveled. He was always out in nature, taking pictures, showing it and sharing it with his friends. So yeah, my intention would be one, give myself grace, give myself the space I need to grieve. And two, honor Angus by appreciating life and getting out in nature more and going for walks. Because when I go for a walk, it'll be like bringing Angus with me. And that's something that's really going to give me initiative because I normally want to just stay inside, but I'd be like, I'm going to go with Angus and go for a walk.
I love that. And I love the balance of holding your own grief and also honoring Angus as an individual who had such an impact on your life, and honoring your friendship too, and recognizing that that bond still can continue. And I want to highlight this. It used to be a long time ago, researchers were like, well, that bond has to be severed. You have to be able to move on completely. And we know that's not true, right? That just doesn't align with human behavior, their wants, their desires, and their needs. And so by continuing to acknowledge Angus's presence, that's such a beautiful way to integrate your grief experience at this point. And 10 years down the road, you may revisit Angus again. It doesn't have to be this thing that's only right at the start of the journey. So thank you for sharing these strategies that you're going to use, because I think what you discussed as the strategies you are going to employ are helpful for so many other people as well.
Yeah, I hope so. One of the things that I know as we've been talking about this and as I've been going through just the journey of talking about what I'm going through and being public, because as I said before, I'm not comfortable being public about my grief. But one thing that I've learned from this experience is that it's really, for me, it's been very healing to be public about my grief. And I'm hoping that our listeners, in hearing about what I'm going through, what my husband is going through, what we're going through as a couple, that they would be able to relate to it and then give themselves permission to grieve how they grieve and not be critical about that. And also, I want to say in this experience, I've also, developed like compassion for people who are supporting grievers and how it's important to give yourself grace and know that there isn't like the perfect thing to say or do. And just being present, I would say that, you've really modeled for our listeners so much care and compassion. And it has given me the space to be okay with how I'm showing up in my grief and embracing that and accepting that. So I want to also say that for those out there like me who are maybe shy and don't want to express their grief or don't want to express, that's okay too, but trying it with someone who you trust and someone that is going to listen to you and give you that space, it's worth trying. I'll just say that. I'm not saying you should or you have to. I'm just saying, from my experience being a private griever, having this experience talking about this, publicly has been healing.
Thanks, LaShawn, for sharing that. I remember when my daughter died, one of the first things that I thought of a creative project for myself was to do the whole Humans of New York thing, only specifically just on grief and loss. And I had this whole idea that I never followed through with for so many reasons. And it just wasn't the time, right, in my life to be working on that project. But I think what you're saying is kind of hinting at what that instinct was, is just the power of storytelling and the power of being able to share our stories in a place of non-judgment with care and being able to show up as ourselves. And so I guess I'm going to circle in on a coaching nugget of wisdom here, and it's going to be for those who have grievers in their lives. And that's what I ask as a friend. And as Lil Sean pointed out, nobody's going to do this perfectly. That's not the point. But as a friend or family member or someone close to someone grieving, be sure to hold that space for the storytelling, and really hold that space with compassion and non-judgment. So that's my nugget of wisdom for today. LaShawn, what about you?
I love that you were saying, hold the space for the storytelling. And I just want to circle back to how important it is for the griever and for ourselves, the individual, to give yourself grace. Part of self-care, especially in the grieving process, is giving yourself grace, because I would say that from my personal experience in the course of this conversation, I have been able to let go of that critical part of myself that's like, you're not grieving right, you're not human, kind of thing, and just letting that go. And I would say, once you give yourself grace, healing can begin. Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.